give me great pleasure to introduce Johnny from Santa Barbara.
My name's Johnny McGregor, and I'm an alcoholic.
It's
a blessing to be at an alcohol or a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm really grateful for this program, and it's an honor that you guys have welcomed us here to speak. So I think the most important thing about my sobriety is this, you know, the opportunity to be of service to people, and you know, no matter what it is, whether it's speaking or going and helping somebody, you know, or it's all the same, you know. My sobriety date is January 1st of 2009. And like I said, my home group is the Junkyard Dogs. I have a sponsor, and I work the steps on a daily basis. I guess that if I was going to start and tell you guys what it was like, you know, how it happened for me getting sober and what it's like now. I'm the first oldest son born in this country from Scotland. I'm Scottish, and from a long line of alcoholics, you know. From my dad, my uncle, my grandpa died from alcoholism. my uncle and my dad are sober now, and we kind of have a pact with each other that we were going to stop it at my generation, you know. So, you know, at a very young age, you know, I saw what alcoholism does and drug use does to people, you know, and knowing that. by the time I was 5, I was put up for adoption because my family was going down the toilet. And I ended up in a family that was, you know, violent, and you know, I things were kind of rough growing up. You know, I didn't get to see like the regular family home life, you know what I mean, and wonderful Christmases and all that stuff. So by the time I was 10 years old, I was already getting arrested, and then by the time I was 11, I did my first juvenile hall thing, and then I didn't see the light of day until I was 17. And then after that, I was kind of, you know, I was already almost 18, so it was on, you know, this is what, you know, life, this was my life, and this was, you know, I don't know how any other way to explain it, but, you know, I just had a certain mindset then, and I was, you know, I had made my choice of what I was going to do, you know, and being, being a criminal and using drugs and drinking, that's just seemed basically a normal thing to me, you know. It wasn't like I was going to be a doctor, you know, or go, you know, go do something awesome, you know, or, you know, graduate high school and go to college. Like, none of that stuff was options for me, you know. I did end up going to a trade school, and, which was kind of cool that I did that. But, then I stayed, you know, for some miracle, I stayed sober because they drug test you at this trade school. It was Job Corps, and it was for like lower income kids. And so I stayed sober, and then right before I was going to graduate, I went and got jacked up, you know, and I thought, well, you know, I can stay sober, so I'm good, you know. I never thought there was a problem with alcohol or any of that stuff. Within a year and a half, I was doing my first prison term, you know, adult prison term. So that whole year, you know, I was like, just, you know, basically trying to be a normal person and go to work, but I was drinking and doing other things on the side, and then plus on top of that, I was doing crime and going to work, and I was confused, you know, and I didn't know how to be a normal person, you know, and go to work every day and be responsible. So I ended up going to prison, and I caught a possession of a weapon and an attempted murder, and you know, when I rolled into Tehachapi for reception, I thought, you know, they had that Social Distortion song about prison bound playing on the bus, you know, when we rolled in there, and I thought, this is my life, you know, this is it right here, you know, I felt like I had graduated and I was going to fucking college. You know what I mean? This is where I was supposed to be at. And you know, I get there and I see all the homeboys that I knew when I was younger, you know, older, and hey, where are you going? Where are you headed? This and that. And it felt good, you know, and it was like my little family, you know what I mean? And like I said, ended up in the shoe, drinking the whole time. I didn't use drugs when I was in prison, drinking the whole time. Every week we'd have a batch ready. And so I never really like detoxed off of alcohol, you know, or anything like that. I was still drinking, you know, and you know, always getting rode up, 115s, you know, I ended up maxing out my term and, you know, just getting into it, you know, and about a year and a half, I finally made it to the main line and after almost 6 years, and I ended up getting a celly from La Mirada that was an older homeboy of mine, and this old dude, you know, like 50 years old, he was on the front end of 20 years, and, you know, if I didn't have a long sleeve shirt on, you'd see all my tattoos, but this guy looked exactly like me, but older, you know, and all tatted up, you know, just that look, he had that look that, you know, and so when he came, I already had the cell. When he came into my house, you know, I was like, you know, got my hustle on, making tattoo ink. I got the batch in the corner, you know what I mean? I'm rolling, man. You know, I got my little house together, and he just walks in there and, like, shakes his head, like. And I know why, what he saw, you know? fortunately for me, he was in the program. He was in the fellowship out on the streets, you know? And his sponsor was riding him. And this guy was gonna get out when he was 70 years old, you know, and I would talk to him. We became close, you know, he loved me, you know, and he used to tell me like, hey, bro, you're the best celly I ever had, man. You know, I don't want to lose you, bro. And I'll keep a bed open for you right here, you know. If you land on this yard, I'll make sure you get back into this house, you know. Because I was going to parole, you know, soon, you know. And he's all, but, you know, on the other hand, you can just make it out there. And I would be happier if you did that. So, and then my uncle, some of you might know him from Santa Barbara, Tom McGregor. He's got about 17 years sober, and he was writing me too, and he would send me like prayer of St. Francis, and I'd be like, man, this doesn't fucking apply to anything, man. You know, this isn't real, dude. And you know, some church crap. And then my celly was read his letters from celly, like it would say some of the stuff like one day at a time, you know, stuff like that. And I'm like, yeah, dude, one day at a time up in here, man, you know. And it was just, you know, but I saw something in him that I didn't see in anybody else, you know. You know, everybody else was this, you know, image, you know what I mean? I started to see through the bullshit, you know. And this guy kind of opened my eyes up to it, you know. He told me one time, he's like, hey, bro, check out all these dudes out on this yard, right? You know, they all think they're running something. You know, they all think they're, you know. And at the time, you know, a lot of stuff was going on and people were getting hurt and, you know, we were hurting people and doing a bunch of different stuff. And he said, you know what, every dude bends over for the cops and shows his asshole. Every dude on this yard does that. He's all, you know, if that's what you want in your life, bro, then you can continue to do the same things that you're doing right now. You know, and I thought, you know, I didn't want to hear it then. But I hear it now, you know, and all these guys, you know, me being young, and you know, there was always somebody like, hey, bro, come on, let's, you know, or, you know, always trying to, you know, there's always somebody that's trying to get you involved in stuff. And there's plenty of stuff that I got involved in and did that I look back on now and I and I'm not proud of it, you know, that I have to live with for the rest of my life, you know, and figure out, you know, my amends list is complicated. You know what I mean? What I have to go back and try to make an amends to people, you know, that might have not had it, you know, I don't know. It's just complicated, you know, and it's a process, you know. But so anyways, this guy, I finally ended up the day we were locked down. I know this is like a prison story, but this is my story. You know what I mean? And, we were locked down for about 6 months cause we were going out with the blacks, you know, and a lot of people were getting stabbed, pulled off the yard. And, I was on a worker status cause I was a barber. And so on Saturdays, the guys that are on A1A status or worker status, they let us off lockdown. Well, whites are a minority in prison, you know, especially on a 180 yard. And there's probably like 50 brothers out on the yard, and there was about four of us. And I was supposed to parole on a Friday, but you can't parole from a level four on a Friday. You have to wait till a Monday so you can go check in. So I'm like, well, I guess this is, you know, and they had their get back coming on us, man, you know. So we went out to yard, man, and played handball, you know, shot the football, and nothing happened, you know. And I came back into the house, and my cellie just looked at me like, somebody's watching out for you, man. And then Monday morning, I paroled. A week later, I got a letter from my cellie, said the next yard we went out to, it cracked off, you know. And everybody's in the hole now, and God watched out for me. You know, even though I didn't believe in him, he watched out for me. Cause that would have been it, you know, for me, you know, I got, you know, you know, I got strikes and stuff, you know, that would have been it. And so my uncle came, Tom McGregor came and got me and brought, you know, I went through a 6 month this place called Victory Outreach. Cause it was the only place that would take me. I'm from the Inland Empire area. It was the only place that would take me. So I went through this little church thing, which I was kind of like, I didn't want to do it, but, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do, you know. I just kind of stepped out the door, and I was like, holy crap, man, you know, like, what do I do now, you know? I'm looking for a payphone. There's no payphones around anymore, you know what I mean? And I'm like, what the heck? So, you know, I'm just watching people watching TV on their phones, you know. I'm like, whoa, that's pretty cool, you know. And you know, it just seemed things were different, you know. And so my uncle told me, he said, look, man, if you can do 6 months at this Victory Outreach place, I'll bring you up to Santa Barbara. So I talked to my parole officer and I told her what the plan was. And she says, look, if you can do 6 months here without getting locked up again, I'll give you a transfer of parole to Santa Barbara. I was like, all right, cool. So I did it. You know, I played the game. I was still in that mode of playing the game, you know. They ended up making me staff at this place, which was funny. And and they let me have a little cell phone when I was tripping out, you know, like, you know, you're not supposed to talk to girls. So, but I was like, we used to give presents away at the Harley Davidson store. And the girls that worked there, you know, I would draw them like Christmas cards, and then I would go over there and like sneak them a card, you know, and then I'd have them on my cell phone. And I'm talking to them, texting them in the bathroom. I thought I was running shit, you know. And you know, I thought I found my true love, you know what I mean? Like, and, I ended up making it, man. And then when I came to Santa Barbara, they didn't want to take me, you know, and, I ended up getting this lady that was a parole officer there. And she's like, she basically told me what was up. She's like, I know what you're about, dude, you know? And, you know, I will not hesitate to violate your ass. You know, I will not. You know, I'm not going to pay you any money to stay in a sober living. I'm not going to do anything for you except drug test you. And if you fuck up, I'm going to take you back to prison, you know? And I thought, I'm like, yeah, I got you, yeah. You know? And still didn't know what I was going to do, you know? And so I went to Newhouse, and I got into Newhouse, and my uncle owns a small aircraft maintenance company in Santa Barbara. It's called Accurate Aviation, and originally it was avionics, and that's like electrical systems and aircraft and instruments and stuff like that. Well, then they merged with a company that does maintenance on piston recip engines on general aviation stuff. So he's like, look, dude, if you want to work here, I'll hire you part-time. You'll clean the floors and the bathrooms and wash airplanes, but you're going to have to find some other kind of work, too, to make up for rent and stuff. So I thought, okay, cool. So I ended up working there. I saved my money. I bought a little motorcycle that didn't run. I brought it in the shop, got it running, and then I started doing what I was supposed to do, you know? And I was going to AA because they require you to go at Newhouse. And I got a sponsor because they required you to do it. But I made it up to the fourth step, and I did a fifth step with a guy, but it wasn't thorough, you know? I was just like, oh yeah, my uncle's like, you gotta do the fifth step and earn your seat in AA, blah, 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 you know? So I was like, all right, dude, I'll do it, you know? And you know, and in the meantime, I'm writing my old celly. I'm like, dude, they got me on some crazy, you know, I'm trying to do this, dude. And he's like, look, just do, you know, he's like encouraging me, you know. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing, bro. They want me to do this. They want me to do that. And he would write me back and be like, just do it, bro. And so I did it. And and then, you know, I ended up, I don't know what, a day turned into a week, into a year, and then into 2 years, into the 3 years. And then finally, like, I earned my respect on the floor with the mechanics, not just my uncle. And one of the old guys in there signed my letter to go take my AMP test, which is airframe and power plant mechanic. And I'd worked with him for 3 years, you know. And so I went down and took this test, and I passed it, you know. It was the hardest test I ever took in my whole entire life. You know, it was a 3 written tests, a power plant test, airframe test, and a general test, and then an oral test and a practical test. And they want to make sure that you know how to work on an airplane and everything that has to do with it. And I freaking passed it, you know? And, that's when it freaking hit me, you know, what was going on, you know? And I wrote my celly. I told him, I said, bro, I just got my freaking AMP, you know? And he was like, holy crap, dude, you know? And and then, you know, because I wasn't working the steps to the best of my ability, and because I wasn't applying the principles of the program in my life, my mind started going back to the way it used to be, you know? I was already setting myself up to commit crime, you know, and to go do stuff without even, like, you know, how Shannon was talking about, you know, just that mental blank spot. Well, those mental blank spots were starting to come back, you know. I was already back thinking in that direction, you know. Everybody would look at me from the outside and be like, dude, this guy's a freaking miracle, look at him, he's, you know. And basically the only reason I was going to meetings at the time was to get pussy, you know what I mean? That was it. You know, I would go there to talk to girls, and excuse the way, you know, but I'm just telling you the truth. You know, I would go there because there was girls there, and they were willing to go out with a convict. You know what I mean? Like, normal girls, they won't do that, you know? You know? they just don't do it, you know? As soon as I take my shirt off, you know, they're like, whoa, dude. You know, like, you know what, man? You know, we could be friends, you know. You're like, come on, you know. So, you know, and that was it, you know. And you know, my uncle, like, I got it to the point where at least he was off my ass, you know. And I was going to meetings, you know, and he would flip out because, you know, every couple weeks I had a new girl, you know. And like, he'd like, what the heck are you doing, man, you know. And he would tell me, which step is she on? And I'm like, I don't fucking know, man. You know? What? She a newcomer? And I'm like, I don't think so. I didn't ask her. So, Yeah, it was pretty. And he's old school, like from Europe, you know. And the way they are is like, if you have a girl, they have to, the family has to accept her, you know. Like, you can't just show up with a bunch of girls all the time, you know. Like, he's old fashioned, you know. Like, he has to, there has to be approval for him, you know. And so, anyways, because of that, you know, because of that way of thinking, my life was going downhill. And I was here, you know, I would go to meetings and I would hear, you know, I would hear like big therapy sessions, you know, like people would just sit around in a circle and talk about their problems all the time, you know. And I'm like, man, I'm not buying this, you know. And it doesn't seem like their life's getting much better. So I'm not going to do the steps like the way they say, or, you know, I'm not going to buy into this higher power thing and getting on my knees and praying every day. I'll show up, but, you know, I'll kind of pretend that I'm doing it just so, you know, the people that care about me will kind of stay off my back. And I suffer the consequences of that, you know. And so, you know, I finally got to a point where I knew I needed to do something. I've been sober, you know. I haven't been using, I haven't been drinking, but I wasn't doing the deal to the best of my ability. And then, you know, I got a sponsor. It's Mike N from Santa Barbara, and he's an old con from back in the day from Ojai. And, you know, I started kind of working the steps with this guy and being honest with somebody, you know, because I trusted him. And I did like a little small four step with him and a fifth step, you know, one night. And then things started to get kind of a little better, you know. And then he took off, and I ended up getting Darren as a sponsor. And I just texted him. I mean, I knew who he was, and he knew who I was because of my uncle. But I just got his number, and I texted him, and I said, hey, dude, I'm looking for a sponsor. And he was like, all right. And I kind of told him what was up, you know, like, hey, this is what's going on with me. This is what I need to do. And he's like, all right, dude, you know, let's do it. So I did all the steps over again. I went through and made another inventory, and I didn't leave anything out on purpose, you know. I made an amends list. I went out and made amends, you know. I started getting on my knees in the morning and praying to whatever, I don't know, you know. And I started doing that, you know, the steps, you know. And my life started getting better. I don't know how, but it did. And not only that, but I started to hear the message in the meetings, like really hear it. And, you know, even if it's a sucky meeting, I can go in there and at least hear it from one person, you know, or I could be the person to bring it. You know, there's a lot of things in AA that you hear that's not from the book or not from the traditions or not from the steps that people just make up, you know. And I was the type of alcoholic that even if I wanted to stop, I couldn't stop. You know, and I can't buy into you don't have to take another drink if you don't want to thing, you know, because it doesn't make any sense to me. I don't want to, but I'm still going to drink, you know. I don't want to punch this guy in the face, but if I'm not spiritually fit, you know what I mean, I'm going to let it fly, you know. If somebody says something to me that's messed up, if I'm not spiritually fit, I don't want to tell this dude to go screw off, but I'm probably going to, you know. There's a lot of things that I'm going to do that I don't want to do, and I'm look back on it and be like, man, I wish I would have never done that, you know? So what it is if you do a spiritual program, you don't ever have to drink or use again. You know, that's what happened to me. I don't have to be a miserable screwhead or a miserable convict sitting in a prison cell ever again if I do these steps, you know? To the best of my ability, if I'm honest with my sponsor, if I'm honest with people, you know, I don't have to go back that way. But I have to put in some work, you know, I have to do something. I can't just sit there on my knees and pray, God, keep me sober today, and then go hang out with a bunch of idiots that are getting high and hanging out in the living room while everybody's slamming dope, you know. I'm going to have to put in some work, you know. And that means, you know, more than just making an inventory or doing that. That means seeking out people to help. That means going and being in a service at work. Like, I look at God now as an employer, you know. Somebody's in charge of me, not myself anymore. I ask God in the morning for his knowledge, you know, for his will for me, and that power to carry it out. That's it. You know, I don't ask them for a brand new truck. I don't ask them to, you know, for $1 million. I don't do any of that because I know that God's going to look at me and be like, dude, you got to earn it. You got to work for it, you know? And that's good with me, you know? Now, there's other things in Alcoholics Anonymous that I found too was a lot of people say that the newcomer is the most important person in the room, you know? And if it wasn't for the old timers in this room, I wouldn't be here. That's one of the things that made the most impression on me in my life was a dude that was that dude that had 15 years that came up to me and said, "You know what, man? I was in the feds for, you know, I just did, you know, 12 years in the feds and I'm sober and you can stay out too. You can have the same life I have. You know, I saw an example of what happens when you do the steps, you know. And I think that's what the newcomer wants to see. Because if he comes in here and there's just a bunch of guys running amok, not doing the work, you know, he's going to go get high and die. You know, or he's going to go get messed up and die. They need to see somebody in here that's doing the deal, you know. And that's what it's like for me, you know. When I walk into a room at Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm looking for the dudes that are doing the deal, you know. And then I'm also looking for that, you know, poor dude that's like just trashed and be like, "Hey, dude, you want to hang out with my crew?" You know what I mean? We got a crew over here of dudes that are doing the deal, you know? And, you know, either they go, you know, either they go, you know, "Oh, I don't know about that," or they jump in, you know? And and they do it with us and they stay sober, you know? So the most important person to me in Alcoholics Anonymous is the old timer, you know, because if it wasn't for him, these meetings wouldn't be here, you know, and that, you know, that's just true for me. It might not be true for other people, but the blessings that, you know, what it's like now is I, you know, there's a lot of stuff icing on the cake that I have now that, you know, I could spend all day talking about, but the main things for me is I recently just got a job at a company called Avex and Camarillo. I work on $3.5 million aircraft, Pratt & Whitney PT6 turbine engines. I'm living the freaking dream, man. You know, if you would have asked me 5 years ago, "Hey, where do you see yourself at?" I'd have been like, you know, "None of your business," you know. You know, so you know, I have a home group and I work with dudes. I have friends, man, that I wouldn't trade anything for, and I would lay down everything for, you know. Like Shannon, you know, like, you know, he's, you know, one of my bros, you know, and I've known him a while, man, and to see what happens to somebody when the miracle happens, it's like you can't fake it, you know. It just happens, and it's like it's just the example that he sets, you know. You know, my sponsor Darren, you know, like, he's the dude's a machine, you know, and he's just constantly helping people, you know. I have a relationship with a higher power that I never knew could happen. You know, I didn't even know about that stuff before. Before, I was so closed-minded and I hated everybody and I was poor me. Everybody freaking screwed me over, so it's an excuse for me to be this way. You know, I'm justified in what I do and that's it, you know. I didn't know, you know, I didn't know what happiness was, you know. I didn't even know, you know, I hear people, like, I would talk to my mom and she would say, you know, "Happiness is a choice." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" You know, like, I didn't even know what happiness was. You know, I thought happiness was, "Oh yeah, we're on our way to the Connect. He's holding and we got it." You know, I thought that was happiness, you know, or we're going to go pick up a beer and there's a kegger down the street and there's going to be a bunch of hot chicks there. Like, hell yeah, you know, like, that was happiness, you know. And now I see happiness as something that is proportional to what work I'm putting in to being the man that I'm supposed to be, you know. The definition of manhood has, for me, has completely changed, you know. You know, I used to have this like this definition of manhood that was, you know, I mean, it would probably work like in the Viking days, you know what I mean? But it doesn't work out here. you know, being kind and loving to people, being a foundation for people, being an example, not only in Alcoholics Anonymous, but where we go out there, you know, in my shop, being an example there, in aircraft business or an aircraft in the trade, honesty and integrity is a real big thing, you know, and then working the steps and doing this deal has allowed me to be able to be that, you know. I wear long sleeve shirts to work every day. You know, none of those guys know any, you know, other than the fact that Johnny's a good mechanic and he's smart and he's a young dude. You know, I'll do anything they ask me to do. You know, you got to clean the belly on this thing to go look for broken rivets. Like, nobody wants to do it. I'll do it. You know, you got to climb down into this tail and like I'll do it. You know, I've used the tenacity or whatever you want to call it, the heart that I had before, and I've transferred that over, and God's allowed me to use that talent for the things that are going to help me, you know, instead of being like, we got to run from the cops and we got to go do this and, you know, like, not going to give up, you know. We're not giving up today, you know what I mean? So, you know, just the pigheadedness of myself, you know, I you guys laugh, you know, because probably some of you relate to that. And, you know, the thing too is I never had a bottom. Like, a lot of people had a bottom, you know, and, I just reached a point where a little crack in the door opened and I had a choice to either keep going down, you know, the road that I was going, or like slip through that crack. And there was a couple people that were, you know, really important in opening that door for me, you know. And you know, I had heard a little bit what I needed from somebody, and he had told me that there was other things out there besides being in prison, you know. And and I thought, no shit, you know, really? No, for reals, dude, you could actually have a job and do well for yourself if you wanted to, and have a beautiful girlfriend and, you know, get married and have kids and have, you know, all this stuff. And I'm like, really? Where'd you read that at? You know, like, I didn't know that that was possible, you know. And I just looked at everybody out in the world as like potential victims, you know, like, well, you know, did he leave his keys out? I fucking, you know what I mean? The front door's open, you know, I just saw him leave, you know. Like, just a scumbag, not really a scumbag, but just a, you know, a criminal, you know. And so I went through that door, and I got this blessing, you know, and because of God's grace, I wouldn't be able to be here today if it wasn't for the grace of my higher power, you know. And I wouldn't be able to have this privilege to do this, you know. I've been a guy that I'm close friends with, this guy, Bob, we call him Maui Bob, and he's got a bunch of years, old iron worker, and he tells me, you know what, Johnny, the funny thing is I get to live two lifetimes in one body, and that's been true, you know, that's true for me. Thank you for letting me be of service.
All right, thank you very much, Johnny. Let's give Johnny another hand.